Welcome to another episode of Sit Rep, the official DVS podcast. I'm your host, U.S. Army combat veteran, Greg Williams. In celebration of African American History Month, we're going to take you on a journey. Let's start here in 1944.
Oh, you want me to read it now? Okay. This letter was dated 28 December 1944, somewhere in England.
This is Terry Holliday, Acting Assistant Commissioner of Engagement and Community Services here at New York City Department of Veterans Services.
Dear Mom, I hope you and Pop are all both well and doing all right. I'm back in England and all in one piece. You may write me here at the hospital. I dreamed on the front that I was dying in your arms. I suppose that is fine talk for a son who hasn't been home for nearly 7 years. Mother, I am so tired mentally and physically. 3 years is a long time to live from day to day with nothing to look forward to but another problem or another attack. I hope I can be home with you. Give Pop my love. So long, Mom, your loving son, Rod. My dad was a tanker in the 4th Army Division. I think he landed on Utah about 30 days after D-Day. My father came out of the front lines where he was suffering from trench feet. They didn't have the right shoes, they didn't have the right clothes, and they said the trench feet took a lot of people out as a result of that. This letter was written about 3 weeks after he was taken out of the line. My father was very light complexion. Some of my father's relatives were Native American or part Native American. My father quite often could pass for white. Okay, and in those days, that meant something. When he enlisted as a Native American, and that allowed him to be in a combat outfit. If not, you're in a labor camp, you're digging ditches, you're cooking food, you know, you're doing stuff like that. So, and that's what happened. And many people did not realize that he was African American and American Indian or whatever. My birth certificate says that I'm African. My mother was African American or Negro, and my father was red. You know, so, you know, I guess that's the way things were done. But in those days, I think a lot of people tried to do what they could do to reach for a higher station in life. My father had a sister who enlisted in the WACS. Somewhere along the line, she decided she wanted to get out of the WACS. So she goes and she tells her commanders that she's not really white. She's black. As a result of that, they conducted an investigation. My father said that he was called into his company commander's office. So he asked my father, he said, listen, I really have to ask you a question. What race are you? All right. And my father says, well, I'm Native American. You see it on my records. He said, you have a sister. She says that she's black. So my father said, look, I don't know. She can say anything she wants to say, but I'm Native American. Because if you're telling someone that you're a Negro, it made life that much more difficult. And the service, it did the same thing. I mean, we're way beyond that now, but, you know, that was it. I enlisted in 1968, March of 1968, and I enlisted in the New Jersey National Guard. And I wanted to serve because everybody in my family had served, you know? So I wanted to, but here I am, I'm graduating from college. There's a war in Vietnam that I didn't know about, I didn't care about, you know, that thing. To be promoted to colonel was quite an achievement. My brother was promoted to a lieutenant colonel. We call 3-4-star generals friends, and that's something my father never did, you know? So we like to think that he'd be very proud of us, and I don't know that if he did not serve, would we have done the same thing? I think the way that I did it, I think a lot of people had that opportunity. You just have to take it. If it's in front of you, you just have to take it. Now, you need a gatekeeper, okay? And those gatekeepers can keep you out, but they also let you in, okay? And I think that if you're somebody who supports the mission and you do something, you know, I think the way is clear for you to compete, you know? So that was it.
All right, I think we're good with this installment.
This is Jonna Williams, a U.S. Air Force veteran.
In Washington State, my senior year, no problems. Now, when I lived in Florida, being a minority, tons of problems. And I actually went to Satellite Beach High School. So it was still only maybe like 30 of us in the school. But I experienced more racism in Florida than I did in Washington State. Like there was one time where the locker area where all the African Americans hung out. And mind you, this is a military school. Okay. Well, all the African Americans hung out. We went to school with skinheads, warlocks. They painted a troll doll black, put a rope around his neck, put his hair in four ponytails, and threw it over there in the locker area. We had a history teacher say that he's not celebrating Black History Month because blacks didn't do anything. And it was interesting because we had Deomi come to the school. A lot of people don't even know what.
What's that?
It's NAACP of the military. So they go and they investigate when you have, when involving either military or military families being discriminated against.
Wow. Okay. Yes. So you're putting on a uniform.
Yes.
You're black.
Yes.
Did you ever get that moment where somebody in your unit wanted to just, you know, kind of get that pass to say certain things and express certain views, and you were there, mm-hmm. and you're like, hey, right? were you ever faced with that choice of, hey, I had to choose between the uniform or my skin color?
Yes. And at that time, I chose the uniform because I didn't want to be Article 15 and kicked out of the military.
Go and get story. Story time. use person A, person B.
Person A, person B. Okay. Well, there was plenty of times when we were all, because in the dorms, we always all hang out together. Sometimes when alcohol is involved, individuals begin to get more relaxed. The individual, he went, person A went as far as saying, so I'll say this. Sometimes individuals think that just because they're around you and the N-word should not be used by anybody, but they go to the next level and they use it. I'm not a fan of the N-word at all, whether it's G-A or E-E-R, but sometimes they think just because we're friends and I've been around you that I could just drop it. And, you know, kind of that was like the situation that was, you know, used.
How did that affect you like the day after? Like you just experienced this. This is new. This is not what you were taught in basic.
Well, you know what? It wasn't new to me because I was a military brat. So I was used to going to school kind of with people who were I wouldn't even say ignorant, just lack of knowledge. I'm not saying that it's okay that you sometimes give individuals passes, but I've went through so much racism in like middle school and high school till it was like, you know what? He's just another person that's either ignorant or lack of knowledge. So I just choose not to, I mean, put it this way. I'm not going to give you extra ammunition to add to your ignorance, okay? Because sometimes people say things to you to get a reaction. And my goal is not to react every time somebody say something, and you're not going to say something to me so you can add to what you think a way of an African-American woman would carry herself. So I almost try to think when I come encounter with individuals like that, I'm not going to give you the satisfaction because they say things to you to provoke you so that they can say, oh, I told you she'll be the angry black woman, or I told you she'll do this, or I told you to do that. So sometimes you get a pass and it's not because of you. It's because I'm not going to give you feed into your ignorance, if that makes sense.
Based on that experience, did you really realize that it might be a challenge for you to serve in the military while, you know, you're a specific race? Or did it not hit home yet, just after that one incident?
No, it didn't hit home yet. Actually, it didn't hit home until I was actually faced with it at work. But in my actual career field, because I had there was a time where basically when I was in the military, I won Airman of the Quarter, Attitude is Everything, Dorm President, Element Leader. It was time for me to go up for wing. I had a chief come tell me to sit down. You know, the next person is going to get it. That's when it actually hit home. And I was like, wow, I can't believe this exists in the military. That's when it hit home.
Were you ever that token African-American friend?
Oh, my God.
Like, this is my black friend. give me that experience.
Right? Yeah, yes. So, yeah, no, it's a lot of times, like just going out with a group of Marines, you find yourself as the only black, you know, person out there. And you're like, how the hell did was it? I thought James was coming. And no, they, okay, great.
Amber Patton, a voice actress and Marine Corps veteran.
It was really weird being in Japan because I don't think they meant it disrespectfully, but the Japanese people would be staring a lot. And they're just like, it's more just like in awe, like, look at that black person over there. Like, we don't see a lot of black people. So, you know, but yeah, so then it, there's this like fine line where sometimes you're out and Japanese people are interested in getting to know you and talking to you. And then you have your white military people come up like, yeah, this is my friend. This is my black friend. Yeah. See everybody. Put me on display. Like, you know, a lot. Yeah, that happened quite a bit. And it's like, all right, well, I'm going to the bar. Don't talk to me for a few minutes. We'll discuss later. There are people that I also worked with that we were not very close because you could tell, obviously, they don't have many friends of color, specifically black, and they do that on purpose. There's a reason for that. It was around the time that Mike Brown was shot, and I had this staff sergeant, white staff sergeant, get on my post and just start the, you know, well, I was poor and I grew up in a trailer home and nobody helped me. And I was like, I want nobody talking to you, first of all. And second of all, like, I'm talking about a black kid that was shot and his body was laid out in the street for hours. That's disrespectful. And it was like, well, you know, you know, we just have to get all the facts. And, you know, you don't know what happened out there. Nobody knows. And we just have to wait for them to tell us all. I was like, yes, because the news never lies and neither do the police. Got it. Okay. Thank you. Next. And it was just it, you know, this was somebody that I had served with. We had lots of laughs together. We got into a bar fight together. There was a group of us. Nothing happened. Everybody's good. You know, this was somebody that I considered a real friend. And, you know, we got into the inbox and it was, you know, he's just like, you know, trying to convince me, I guess, that it wasn't about race. And, you know, he shouldn't have been stealing. And I was like, so stealing constitutes death? Like, even if he did steal, yeah, you go to jail. Sure, you be tried by a so-called impartial court. Fine. But he's dead now. He doesn't get a chance to redeem himself, even if he had done that. So you think it's justified. And he couldn't answer me. And it always came back to, well, white people and my cousin. I'm like, again, they are still alive. You're missing the point. And it was a lot of comments like that of just like, well, they shouldn't have. Well, we don't have all the facts. Well, wait to see what they. No, fuck you. I'm not waiting. I already know.
You are mixed.
Correct.
How do you fit in? How do you fit in the military? Let's just start off that way, man.
Being mixed, I'm Louisiana Creole on my daddy's side, and I'm European Jewish on my mother's side. So a Jewish in the U.S. military is a rarity, and then an officer especially, and then a West Point officer who's Jewish, but then a West Point officer who's Jewish and mixed with African and European, and Native American, small percentage. I get Puerto Rican the most. I get Italian. I've gotten Dominican when I'm dark color, tan. I get tan pretty good, like a bronze, I get.
This is Boyd Melson, a U.S. Army combat veteran.
Well, I grew up an Army brat, so I grew up on military installations, so I didn't know any different growing up, and my daddy was enlisted. I can remember 3 years old sitting me down and giving me these monologues. You're a black baby, don't you ever forget this. And I understand why he started ingraining this at such a young age, because of how I look. I needed to know what I was, what I am, and especially what I was at that age, because it would be very easy for me to fall into a different type of existence because of how I look. And if it wasn't ingrained in me, I wouldn't understand who I am. But it also built some challenges because being my age, I'll never forget this. I'm about to crack you up. I'm 10 years old, and I got the word Creole mixed up with charcoal. And I was telling one of my buddies, Matthew Jones, on the base where I used to live on. He's black. And I was like, my daddy told me I'm charcoal. And he goes, you don't look charcoal. I said, I am. You don't understand. There's a whole bunch of people that are charcoal too, and they're from Louisiana. And then he goes, but you're white. I said, no, I'm charcoal. I have funny anecdotal story. So my senior year at West Point had its first black commandant, a one-star general, second in charge of the school, General Leo Brooks. We had a sensing session in the first month of school that he was there. All my classmates knew by that time I was the token. And he comes in, and General Brooks goes, before I start, I just want to say, does anybody have any burning questions? And I rose my hand, and I said, sir, my name is Cadet Melson, Boyd Melson. I just want to let you know, you're probably looking around this room, and you're thinking that someone in here is in the wrong room, but I'm just letting you know. I am black. And all my classmates started cracking up. I did to playfulness with myself. And he got, oh, no, I didn't, because he doesn't want to be pure. And I want to say, sir, it's okay. But I never really had a group growing up. It's a little different now. We got a Facebook page. We got a chat group of maybe 15 of my closest brothers from West Point who are all brothers and darker complected as far as when I say all brothers. And I always just feel happy to be included because I've never been included. They could never know. That's why I'm so thankful, because my childhood was not being accepted. I didn't suffer and experience racism growing up. And I didn't experience poverty growing up. So even though I didn't live it, I was open to it. I didn't have a choice. I was created from attempted genocide and slavery and survival of those sides. So those were the values I had. I also live with guilt, and this is the guilt. Every time I go outside and it's cold and I have a hooded shirt on, I think to myself, I get to put my hood on and I never have to worry about somebody thinking I'm trying to hurt them. And I get angry to an extent because why do I get this pass? Why does it exist? The same people who are just a pigment is darker, but could be exactly be me. But they're going to be stereotyped. I get that freedom. And it's not fair that I do. I can't make my skin darker to experience it, but I'm conscious of it. Every time it's cold. It's cold, so I want to stay warm. I get to put my hood on. And I don't have to worry about someone wanting to shoot me because they think I'm a criminal. Every time. I bet you think of these things too, what passes you get. And because we're conscious and we realize we're connected, it hurts.
I won't say that it was any kind of overt action that was taken that made me feel unwelcome or made me feel like I was second class, less than, anything of that nature. But I will say that you get a strange feeling when you're looked at as other.
James Fitzgerald, a U.S. Army combat veteran and director of New York City Veterans Alliance.
For a lot of people of color, you get this title, token. And for me, I was the token black guy in many of my platoons, which was, right around 38 to 42 people. And I would be one, maybe if I'm lucky, one of two black guys in my platoon. And even if that was the case, if there happened to be two of us, you're still looked at as something of a mascot. And you're almost stripped of your individuality and just put into a category of, oh, this is our black guy. Oh, you're replacing the last black guy that we had. And it may be in all fun and the best of intentions are behind the joke, but it still makes you feel other. I don't think there's any safe space to criticize the military. I feel that you're always going to place yourself in a position to be adversarial to those who just want to be lockstep and view the military and the veteran community as sacrosanct. But one of the most courageous things that a veteran or a active duty personnel can do is voice some of these opinions, because that will be the only way that these things will change. as a person of color, as someone that's LGBTQ, one of the main obstacles that we've had to face is convincing people that this is real. A lot of this push is to, you know, say that we are here. These are experiences that we are having. This is real. This is something that needs to be brought from the darkness into the light.
That wraps it up for this episode. I'm your host, U.S. Army combat veteran Greg Williams. This episode was produced and edited by Gil Feliciano. Tune in for more Sit Rep next week.